VIP Conduit presents an interview with author Meredith Gibbons. Here is our host for the evening, Marlene Nord.
Welcome, everybody, to this very special event here on VIP Conduit. And of course, welcome, Meredith Gibbons. And we're just really looking forward to talking to you and learning about you and learning what inspired this inspiring book. I could not put it down and read it in an afternoon. First of all, have you always had a vision loss?
Yes, I was born with, I have congenital colobomas, so basically it just means my eyes didn't form all the way. And actually when I was really young, I had some vision in my left eye. I was still considered legally blind, I think, but I had a detached retina when I was like 2. And back then, they weren't very good at fixing detached retinas, and they ended up destroying my optic nerve in my left eye. So I have no vision at all in my left eye, and I have like 2800 in my right eye. So just very, and just a small little peripheral corner of my right eye. So actually, vision-wise, I'm a lot like Callie. I obviously kind of, the character, main character in my story, since that was kind of what I knew, I sort of did. There's a lot of ways I'm not like Callie, and I tried not to make her me, but in the vision situation, we are very similar. So yes, I've had, and I have some decrease in vision, mostly just complications. It's not a degenerative condition, but it has a lot of complications. So I've had a lot of surgeries in the last 10 years and kind of lost a little bit here and there, but honestly, I'm pretty blessed to be 50, almost 50, and still have some vision, but it's very small, just in the one eye.
So what was your childhood like?
Wow. well, I was very fortunate to have great parents. Particularly my mom was the main one that raised me. My parents divorced when I was 10, so it really was my mom. My dad was gone a lot with the Air Force. So I have a sister, an older sister, and then my mom. And she was a tough lady. She never let me get away with saying I couldn't do anything. And I remember one time when I was a little girl saying, you know, I can't clean the floor because I can't see the dirt, which was true, by the way. But her solution to that was, well, just clean it 5 times and then, you know, you got it clean. So that was kind of how I was raised, like figure out a way to do things and find a way around. And but she was a great support, still is a great support. And I went to blind school a few years here and there, I think kindergarten, 5th grade, 6th grade. But the rest of the time I went to a regular public school. And then, of course, I went to undergrad in Oregon. And then I went to graduate school actually in Hawaii. So I have a master's degree from the University of Hawaii.
That's really neat that your mom encouraged you to do things and spread your wings, so to speak. At what point in your life did your interest in writing become apparent?
That's kind of interesting. So I am I'm a college professor. I've been a college professor for I started in 1999. So it's not from 1999 till now. So I guess 25 years I've been a college professor. And I like it. I do a lot of online teaching now because visually that's just a little easier. It's gotten a little harder for me to manage classroom things as my vision's gotten a little worse. And this generation, these people are tricky these days with, you know, devices. It's just, I don't know. I just find the visual aspects are a little harder. But the online environment is really easy. Plus, I don't have to drive there and that kind of thing. So I've been doing that a lot. I still do teach some class, face-to-face classes as well. But I've done a lot of writing in correspondence with being a professor. And I teach interpersonal communication and public speaking and intercultural communication. So I've written a lot of things, I've written a lot of my own case studies and a lot of things like that throughout the years. But I've always wanted to write a full-length novel. But I don't know. I didn't have the courage to do it. And I just felt like I didn't really have an idea for it that was big enough and exciting enough to me to really do, you know, go for it and take the time to fully go for it until about 2 years ago. And it actually started with somebody told me I should write my life story. And I was like, I sat down and I started writing it, and I was bored with it. I know that's funny to say, but it's like writing about yourself is kind of boring. But I thought, you know, it would be really fun to write about a character who had vision loss and kind of introduce maybe the broader world to what it's like to live in that world a little bit, but not write about me, kind of write about somebody else. And so I just started thinking about this story, and I came up with Ben and kind of this mysterious secret that he had. And the thought just kind of rattled around in my head for like a year. And then when I sat down to write it, I literally wrote book one, probably the first draft. I think I wrote it maybe in 3 months. I mean, it wasn't very long that it took me to write it. It just had rattled around in my head for so long. And I honestly really surprised myself, because I didn't know I really had, like, you know, a 70,000, 80,000 word novel in me. So, but I enjoyed the experience so much that now it's like an addiction. Like, I wake up in the middle of the night at 4 a.m. and I just want to write. So it's just kind of one of those late in life discoveries, I guess.
You answered my next question quite well, and that was what prompted you to actually take the plunge and do it. And I think you described that very well. Were there people along the way that came alongside you with encouragement and assistance and things like that?
Well, to be honest, I think that process is happening now. You know, All I Have to Give was my very first novel, and it just came out December 4th of last year. So that was my very first, and I honestly think I surprised my family and my friends. I think people were like, oh, I didn't know that you could do this. And I was like, well, I didn't know I could do this either. So I think people were really skeptical at first until, you know, hopefully until they read my book. And I think I'm getting a lot of support from friends and family and people like you guys now, and encouragement, because you never know. You know, you sit down and write a book and you're like, okay, I love it and I think it's good and I'm totally addicted to Ben and Callie and I'm almost done with the draft. I'm writing the first draft of book three right now, and maybe I'll give you guys a little inside scoop if you want one in a little bit about that. But I, you know, you don't know if anybody else will even like it. You're like, maybe people will like it, maybe they won't. The book went through hundreds of edits. I mean, it's amazing how it almost doesn't resemble the first draft by the time you get to the end. So I didn't know if anybody would like my style of writing or be interested in my story. But I think that people like you all are really encouraging me and coming alongside me as I'm just really at the very beginning of this journey.
Have you done a lot of public speaking or interpretive reading? Your verbal character development was totally amazing, and it was certainly one of the things that drew me into the story.
Well, since I've been a professor for 25 years, yes, I do public speaking virtually every day. So, and I teach public speaking. So, and then, you know, to be honest, I think the other main class that I teach is interpersonal communication, and I study relationships and how communication helps negotiate and grow relationships, and talk about that constantly with both my online classes and my face-to-face classes. So I really, you know, credit a lot, my knowledge or experience or background with communication, human communication, with a lot of that. But I think writing dialogue is so fun. I mean, I can't tell you, you know, as I'm writing my third book right now, just a couple weeks ago, I was writing a dialogue between two characters, and I think I rewrote the dialogue about 18 times, because, you know, dialogue is like where you where you learn the personalities of the characters. And, you know, I'll write a line now and I'm like, oh, no, 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 Ben wouldn't say it that way. And so I'll like erase it and be like, okay, how would Ben say that? Because, you know, of course, by now, by the end of the third book, I know Ben well and kind of know his character. And same with Callie and some of the other characters as well. So it's really fun to try to write in ways that you think that they are thinking, you know, sort of getting inside their head and writing to their personalities and then trying to put humor into it. That part's hard. It's a little hard at times, but it's fun too. So
I think that was the thing, like I said, that really drew me was the development of the characters, right down to Miss Essie's accent. I think everybody should read the audio version because your interpretation is just very cool.
So my Southern stepmom, Parker knows Mickey, who is my stepmom. She's from Alabama. I think that there were a couple other people from the South. I don't know. She doesn't necessarily think I did the best job of Miss Essie, but I think she likes Miss Essie. But you know, I did the best I could. There are a couple of characters. I have two chapters. Just, you know, little scoop here. I have two chapters left to record of book two, so I'm really working on that. I'm hoping to get one chapter done on Thursday and then one early next week. So hopefully book two should be out end of next week or the beginning of the next one. But there are some new characters, some of which are Hispanic. And somebody asked me the other day, are you doing a Hispanic accent for them? And I was like, oh, I tried, but I really, really, really wasn't good at it. So, I really try to distinguish the characters, but I try not to push it beyond my skill level too. I don't want to make it sound too goofy, but I really did have fun with Ms. Essie. And she's such a precious woman. Like literally she's probably, besides Ben and Callie, of course, she's probably my favorite character just because she's just got so much spunk and personality. And so, yeah, she was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can just picture her walking up to someone and giving him a great big bear hug. She was cool. Have you ever had other works published? I know you said this is your first novel.
No, I have not. This is my first published work. You know, like I said, I've done a ton of stuff for my classroom, but I've never actually had anything published. So this was my first. And let me tell you, I don't know if anybody else in this group has tried to publish, but wow. I had no idea. I told my dad, I said, I got a master's degree in communication, and it wasn't half as much of a learning curve as the whole publishing business, advertising, marketing. I'm actually taking a class at the school I'm teaching at, the college I'm teaching at right now, in marketing, because I have no idea how to do marketing and I'm not very good at it. So I'm trying to learn how to market, because most of selling a book is marketing, not, you know, obviously writing is important, but I don't really have those skills. So I'm trying to learn those skills, because if you don't market, your book's not going to go anywhere. So it's a whole new world, this publishing, marketing, selling book things. And it's incredibly complicated and incredibly, I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of books that are published every day, and trying to, you know, rise above the noise and the crowd is really, it's a tough, difficult, hard, complicated business, and that I had no idea what I was getting myself into. But I spent about 3 months honestly just overwhelmed by the whole process. And I finally feel like I'm digging myself a little bit out of that, to where I at least feel like I have the basics down. It's been a lot easier. Like, for example, just putting my books up on Amazon and some of the other places, I mean, that took me forever the first time, and it's going quicker the second time. But it's quite an ordeal.
I certainly admire you for trying, and certainly all of us are very glad that you did. Where did you get the Sakuri idea?
That's a really good question. Okay, so I cannot tell you how many people have like messaged me on Facebook or other places who haven't read the book yet. The number one question I get is, okay, what is a Sukuri? And I always say, I tell them, I can't tell you because that will ruin the story. Like, you know, the whole intrigue of the book is sort of trying to figure out what Ben's secret is and what it is. So, I mean, I guess there's a lot of people on this that haven't read the book yet. So I don't want to spoil it for you by telling you too much, but I will just give you a hint and say, if you look up the word Sukur or sucker, I think it's actually pronounced S-U-C-C-O-U-R, the word actually means to help or to give assistance in time of need. And so when I was coming up with the idea for the book and the idea for Ben's character, I was looking for interesting words that kind of meant that, and I came across that word. And it was funny because my husband came home and I of course like hashed through all these ideas with him. And I said, I found this cool word today I had never heard before. And it's like Latin or something. And I said, you know, I think if I put an I on the end and Sukuri, like I could work that into my plot. And again, I'm trying to be very careful not to spoil anything for anyone that hasn't read it here. So forgive being a little vague here. But I just sort of invented it. And then I went on a Google search because I wanted to make sure no one had ever like invented that word before or used that word before. And I couldn't find it. You know, I could find sucker, S-U-C-C-O-U-R, but I could not find Sukuri anywhere. And I just thought it was a cool sounding word and it really fit with the character and what I was doing. So I totally invented that all on my own.
I hesitated to even ask that question because of the fact that some folks hadn't read it. And wow, you handled that so well. My goodness. You had mentioned that you experienced some obstacles and some things that you had to kind of work through with the whole publishing process. Did you hit any actual roadblocks that kind of stopped you in your tracks and you were thinking, how am I going to get around this one?
Oh, where to begin? Yes, a lot of them. The first one was that I didn't know that much about editors. So after I wrote my first draft and did my own editing to the best of my ability, which was pretty rough, it was my first novel. So I've since learned much better in the subsequent books about editing, but I kind of just went on the internet and got hired an editor. He charged me $1,700 and he destroyed my book. I mean, he went through it. He didn't believe in adverbs or adjectives. He thought that books should have no adjectives and no adverbs. So he stripped every adjective and adverb out of my book. He didn't believe in dialogue tags, which is just, you know, if Ben talks, he has his little line and then it says Ben said or Ben whispered or whatever. The only tag he believed in was said. So he changed every single dialogue tag to said, which was, as you can imagine, incredibly boring to read. If it's every time someone talks, it just says Callie said, Ben said, you know, there's never an adverb or an adjective or another word or anything. And so he just destroyed my, I cried for days because I was like, my story is gone. There's no color in it anymore. It's awful. And I mean, I was down here at my dad's right after it happened. And I just remember I was so angry because I spent all this money and I just felt like he just ruined my book. And so I spent luckily I still had the original book that I wrote. So I spent 3 weeks trying to reconcile the things that I thought he did well, which weren't many, but there were a few with the things I thought he did terrible. And I basically had to go page by page, chapter by chapter, line by line through that entire book over and over to try to recapture. I mean, just to give you an idea, the book started at 95,000 words and he cut it to 65,000 words. So he dumped 30,000 words, most of it by cutting adjectives and adverbs out of my story. So I got it back up to, I think it's 78,000 words or something like that. I added, you know, a ton back in there, but I was so depressed because it was so much work and I paid so much money and I just felt like it was wasted. And then I had to turn around and hire another editor because once I added everything back in, it needed to be edited again because it had all changed. But I did the second time find a much better editor. She's actually in England and she's magnificent. She did my second book and it was such a much better process. But that was my first one. And then there were a lot of little ones. Like I accidentally, every book has an ISBN number. It's like an identifying number. I bought an ISBN from a fraudulent place. I didn't know I was buying it from a fraudulent place. So I spent like $175 on an ISBN and it was the wrong ISBN. So I had to go back and buy another ISBN for another $200. I mean, it just thing after thing like that. I mean, it was just so many things I didn't know. And even cover design, I didn't know you really needed to hire a professional. So, you know, trying to find the right professional and then work with them and learn what I needed on the cover versus, because it's really not necessarily just about what you like. It's about trying to place the genre with the cover. And I mean, it just was amazing. But by far, that editing fiasco was such a learning curve. And I definitely learned a ton from that. But I will say this, too. I improved as a writer because of some of the things he did. So there's a little bit of silver lining to that horrible story, I suppose.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I admire you for not just giving up. Because I think a lot of us probably would. Well, that is all of the questions that I have. And now, if it's okay, we'll open the floor to questions from all of our folks in here.
Hi, Meredith. It's Judy. And I'm wondering, where can I purchase book 2? And I thought I heard you say Amazon is going to have it. Are they also going to have your audio version?
Okay, awesome, Judy. Yeah. So book 2 is the paperback and the ebook will be released on March 20th, which is a week from today, I think, right? I think that's right. Tomorrow, I think. It's Wednesday. So a week from tomorrow, I've actually already uploaded them into the system. So the ebook and the paperback are where they need to be. They're just set to release on the 20th. So those are available on the 20th. The audiobook, and just, you know, to tell you a little bit about audiobook making, it is a time-consuming process. So the first one I did during my Christmas break when I was not, I teach full-time. I'm teaching 7 full classes, and then I also am taking a class. So I'm really got 8 classes. So I'm trying to do it when I have time. The other thing that's really hard is it has to be totally quiet in my house. So I can only do it like when my husband's gone and my son that's still living with us is not home. So that presents challenges as well. So it takes a long time, but I got an early start. I have 2 chapters left, one I'm going to get done on Thursday and one next week. So the audiobook will probably be released, I'm hoping, like the 21st, 22nd. It might be that next week before, because I do want to listen through it a couple times just to make sure I didn't miss anything. It takes about an hour to record a chapter, but it takes 6 hours a chapter to edit, because you have to go back through and like erase every breath sound. And, you know, every time like I click my tongue or, you know, swallow or something. So it takes hours to do this. So but I'm hoping by end of next week or the beginning of the following week, I actually think, so this is kind of complicated. I am not going to ever put my audiobooks on Amazon, on Audible. They pay authors nothing for their audiobooks. It's like 20% So I have to charge a lot of money. And it's really the same way on every platform. I have to charge $25, $30 for an audiobook to make $2 on it. It's just really crazy. And I won't go into all, there's a lot of other issues with, they're using author voices to train their AI. And there's just a lot of moral problems with that going on in the author world right now. That's crazy. So I think I'm just going to exclusively direct sell my audiobooks from now on. That way I can charge like $8 and keep them really cheap for anybody that wants them. And, you know, I'm still, you know, I'm getting a decent amount of money for the, you know, 7-8 weeks of solid work that goes into them. So the best place to get my audiobooks, the paperback and the ebook is everywhere. It's on Amazon. It'll be on the 20th. It will be on, you know, Apple Books and anywhere, pretty Barnes and Nobles, everywhere. But I think the second book in particular, the audiobook, you'll just go to my website, which is meredithgibbons.com. It's just MERIDITHGIBBENS.com. And then there's a little place you can click on the store, and you just go to the store, and then you'll be able to buy it for $8 from my store. And it will go to, I think, Parker and Terry and some of you got the Book Funnel app, and it just goes into that app. You can download it into there and just listen to it directly from there. So right now my plans are really just to try to stick to selling it direct for a myriad of reasons, but most of which so that I can offer it at a price that I think is reasonable. And hopefully maybe, I think Marlene's going to help me try to see if we can try to get it on Bard at some point. I would love to have that happen as well. I'm a huge Bard listener myself, so hopefully that will happen at some point.
Yep, we're working on that.
Hey, Meredith, it's Kevin in Alabama. I was just curious to know what software are you using to clean up your audio recordings and such? And do you use any of the plugins that automatically gets rid of the noise and mouse clicks and stuff like that?
If you know about that, I would love to talk to you. I would love, if I could cut down the amount of time that I spend cutting out, you know, breath sounds and all that, that would really help me out. But right now, I've been using, it's called Hindenburg Narrator, and it's just a simple, you know, I'm also a musician, so I did for a long time, I did music editing. So I'm not completely new to the whole editing world. I recorded music and did some editing with music. So, but I wanted something really simple because I was totally new to this. I'd never done book one. Was my first. And bless your hearts for loving it. I honestly got done with it. I was like, I don't think this is very good. Book two is turning out much better. I'm actually much more proud of book two. So if you guys liked book one, I think you'll really like book two. But yeah, it's just a really simple program. It doesn't have a lot of fancy stuff. So I do have to do a lot of the cutouts myself, which is what takes a lot of time. But the great thing about Hindenburg Narrator is that it did format it automatically for me for ACX, which is Audible, and Findaway, which is what I used to put it on, you know, like Spotify and all those other things. So it does some good formatting for you, but it doesn't do any of that. So if you have information on how to sort of automatically take some of those things out to make it quicker and easier, then that would be awesome. I'd love to know more about that.
Before we go any farther, I wanted to mention that there is a link on our page to purchase her book. If you look at the top of the page, once you log into the site, you'll see it there. I'll tell you, I would recommend it to anybody because, you know, even though it is a romantic theme, there's a intrigue in there and there's just all kinds of stuff in there to grab your attention. That's one thing I was going to ask you that I didn't put on my list because Callie is a musician. I was wondering if you were, and you just answered that one.
Yes, she is. And you know what's really funny is thank goodness for editors because in my first, you know, even after my debacle with my first editor, I had a bunch of song lyrics because I really liked putting some song things in there. And then my second editor was like, oh, no, you can't put song lyrics in your book. You'll get sued. So she saved me. And I had to unfortunately I had some in the second book as well. But you're actually going to find out in the second book that Ben is also has some musical talent. I think there's some hints of that in book one, but it gets much more developed in book two. So yeah, I had to add some musical. I don't play cello. I love the cello. It's my favorite instrument. I'm a piano player and a singer. Again, I really tried. People ask me, one of the number one questions I get about the book is usually, is Callie like you and is Ben like your husband? And I say, no, Callie's much nicer than me. I don't think I'm quite that nice. I don't know. And there are some elements of Ben that I took from my sweet, wonderful husband, whom I love with all my heart. The gentle quality. My husband's a very gentle, sweet, kind person. And for sure, if any of you have read the dedication, I dedicated the book partly to my parents and partly to him, because I feel like Ben, my husband's always kind of seen past the vision thing and just into my heart. And so I wanted to kind of make the Ben character like that a little bit. But I really did try to make Callie some ways like me, just because, of course, we write best about things that we know about. So that was the foundation, but also different from me as well. But yeah, I do love the music theme. Some of it's cropping up a little bit in book three as well. But I just wanted to say too, I'm super impressed with all the gentlemen in this group, because typically my audience is about 95% women, because it is a romance. But I will just to intrigue you men a little bit, there is a lot even more adventure in book two. I think book one is a lot about them meeting the characters, getting to know the characters. Book two has, well, I think I was telling Terry the other day, just to let you know visually, the book cover for book two has a picture of a farmhouse on fire with smoke everywhere. So I don't know if that gives you a little intrigue for book two. There's a little bit more adventure. Lots more romance too for the ladies, because I love romance. So that's in there as well. But there's probably a little more action there for the men too.
Yeah, as I've told you before, Meredith, I'm not a book reader. And Parker can vouch for that. He's always given me books and say, oh, you got to read this. Well, your book really intrigued me. I couldn't quit listening to it. And it had romance, but it had a lot of other things in there that really kind of grabbed my interest. I think it was a mystery, but I enjoyed it. And speaking of music, we have a great music program every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern called Center Stage. And we have a lot of talent on the site, so you know how to get in now. Come in and join us and share some of your music with us.
Meredith, this is Parker. I've known you for quite a while. I'd like to correct you on one statement that you made. Callie is not nicer than you.
I'm laughing, Parker. See, this is the bad thing about the walkie-talkie thing. You guys can't hear me laughing when you're talking, but thank you. That's very sweet. I think she's nicer than me, but you know, you sort of, maybe you, when you write, maybe you kind of write about your ideal you, you know, it's kind of like, I wish I was that patient all the time. And I wish I always, you know, one thing I will tell you that I purposely did, and I did this just for me, just for therapy, is I wrote Callie very confident in herself and very accepting of her vision loss and like comfortable with that. And, you know, I don't know how you guys deal with it, but I have ebbs and flows with that. Like, there are times when I really struggle with my vision loss and feeling somewhat apart. And, you know, I live in a sighted world. I mean, I work in a sighted world. I live in a sighted world. And sometimes it's really hard. And I'm not always that confident or that secure with who I am. But I sort of wrote her that way for personal therapy, because I, you know, it's sort of like, I wish I always felt sort of secure. And I mean, she has her vulnerable moments too, I suppose, but there's a very cool scene. Wow. I can't tell you. See, I want to give things away about book two, but stay tuned. There's some fun scenes with Callie getting to do some fun things that she never got to do. So in some ways too, I get to sort of vicariously live through her experiences a little bit with her. I don't want to give anything away, but with her experiences being with Ben. But anyway, I really, you know, I enjoyed writing that. And I think it in some ways was therapeutic for me. And that's one of the beauties of writing too. I think that you get a chance to say things out loud and work things out in characters that are kind of rolling around in your head. It was a really neat experience for me. I have trouble. People say, well, what are you going to do when you're done with writing, you know, this saga? Which the little inside scoop I was going to give you guys is I think there's actually going to be 4 books. I'm 80% of the way done with book 3, and I am not even close to finishing the story for book 3. So I think it's going to take one more book. So I think there's going to be at least 4 that are about Ben and Callie. And then I am thinking about writing a novella, just a short novel. You guys that have read it, you know Grace from book 1, Callie's best friend Grace. And then there is a new character in book 2 named Donovan that you'll meet in book 2. So I'm thinking about writing a little short story about them as well. So I at least have book 4, the rest of book 3, book 4, and then a little novella there. And then there's lots of other things I could do with the Sukuri thing that I might do, but people ask me all the time, well, what are you going to do when you're done with this? Are you going to go off and are you going to continue to write about characters that have vision problems? Probably not. I mean, I can't even imagine trying to do that again. You know, I probably won't necessarily go that train, but I am really enjoying that. And it's been a great start for me to really write something that sort of was close to my own heart and life.
Hi, Meredith. This is Susie. You mentioned having one son still at home. How many children do you have?
I have 2 boys. My oldest is 21, Ryland, and he just got married this last September. His wife's name is Kaylee. And then my baby that I said is still at home, he's actually 19. He graduated from high school last June. And he's actually engaged to a beautiful girl named Eva, and they are getting married in July. So within just like a year, I'm marrying off both my boys. I told people, I said, my husband and I must have done something right in showing my kids that marriage is a good thing, because both of my boys, since they were little, have wanted to get married, you know, fairly young, and we're excited to get married, and it's sort of rare in this generation of young men. So I'm very proud of both my boys. They're kind-hearted, sweet kids. My oldest is just got a big promotion. He works at Valvoline as a manager, and he just got a corporate promotion inside of that. And then my youngest son is he takes out dents and stuff. I never can get it right, but like a technician, he doesn't do the mechanical part. He does the repair part. So he is at home until he gets married in July, saving money for the wedding and apartments and all of that. But when we get done, I want to ask you guys some questions too. I would love to hear, those of you who have read the book, who your favorite character was or what your favorite scene was, because you know, that's really good information for an author to know, you know, what scene really captured your imagination. I know there's people who haven't read it, so we'll have to be careful not to give too much away, but I'd love to hear that from you guys too.
Meredith, this is Nan. I absolutely loved your book, and I will say that I could not put the book down until I found out what Ben's secret was. I think you did very well with intriguing the reader to want to know that what that was.
Well, I was raised in northern Wisconsin. This is Mar again, Marlene. Everybody calls me Mar on here. But I was raised in northern Wisconsin where there's a lot of snow and ice. So that scene where she kept slipping because she had that those shoes on with the high heels and that formal dress. And I'm like, oh man, I can just picture that. It made me laugh really hard because I can totally relate.
I love that. I had so much fun with that scene. I mean, how romantic is it that, you know, then Ben has to sweep her off her feet and carry her. And yeah, I love that scene. That was so fun to write, but that's awesome. Thank you guys for that feedback.
One of the scenes in the book where the Callie's brother, and I think his name's Luke, I'm not sure. I have bad book amnesia, but I remember the story. And he called him Uncle Ben. And, you know, I don't think I'm all caught up in the story, so it didn't dawn on me till way too late, that, okay, I get the reference. I laugh.
Yeah, I think you're talking about Lee. Lee is Callie's brother, and he's kind of the jokester of this story and kind of fun-loving, and he's a really fun character. And, oh, I wanted to say something about Nan's comment, too, about the mystery. That was actually one of the really good things that my first editor did with me that was a good feedback point, is he helped me. I think about, you know, half of the chapters I had them ending with that good like mystery to try to pull you into the next chapter. But he actually helped me to refine it so that really, oh man, what? The like first 12 chapters, the chapter ends with you going, what? Like, what is wrong with that? It's funny, my father-in-law read the book, and when he was on about chapter 10, he's like, does Ben have some kind of creepy disease or like, what is going on with Ben? So you're just really wondering through the whole thing, is he a serial killer? Like, is he like formed weird or like what is going on with him? So that was a little bit of help from that. I got to give that, I kind of dissed that editor, but he did help me to keep pulling that mystery through each chapter to kind of pull the reader along as well.
Well, it certainly were. I was very captivated by the story, the book, the details that you went to. And it just had a lot going for it. And man, I am so looking forward to the next book.
Well, does anybody else have any questions for Meredith? Or Meredith, do you have any more questions for us?
One thing I was kind of got me is when they're on the way to the hospital. And the car went down over the bank, and he went down to help him. And that was pretty exciting, I thought.
Yeah, and the special surprise at the end.
It's Kevin again, Meredith. First of all, I want to say thanks so much for coming on here and letting us get to know you and know more about your book and your life and everything. It's always cool to me to get to meet and interact with a writer or a musician, and you're both. So really great to hear about you and your book, and I'm going to get me a copy for sure.
That's awesome. Thank you, guys. This is really fun for me. And, you know, I talked to my husband a lot about Ben and Callie and the adventures. I think I've worn him out with, you know, we have a hot tub in our backyard, which is just awesome. And we'll sit in the hot tub and I just hash through ideas with him. And my husband is not a reader. He doesn't really like to read, but he did make it through book one and book two so far, bless his heart. And enjoy them and has really been just a good person to bounce ideas off of. But it's really fun to get to talk to people who enjoyed the story and are intrigued by the characters. I guess I'm curious. I mean, I know we probably, I don't know where visually everybody is, but one of the reasons I really wanted to bring this to you all, and I've also sent a copy to, I don't know if any of you know Sam at The Blind Life, but I sent him a free copy as well, and I think he's going to be helping me do some promotion on his YouTube channel. He agreed to do that with me as well. I'm interested in what you thought about, because, I mean, obviously, I tried to keep the story as the most important thing. I didn't want to turn this into a, you know, what is life like for people who are blind manual kind of thing. I wanted the story to be the main thing. But I just am curious about how you felt about some of the elements, particularly early in the story, where, for example, where they're in the hospital and Ben's kind of watching Lee and Callie interact and admiring the way that Lee seems to understand what she can see and what she can't see and how to work with her in that world. And then even just some of the process of Ben learning her world a little bit and making some mistakes. You know, she gets burned by the coffee and things where he has to ask, you know, what can you see? What do I need to do to help you? And did some of that, I guess I'm curious if some of that struck a chord in some of your experiences. I was trying to be very, I wanted to present, because I think sometimes people in the world think of blind people as, I don't know, so different, or I was trying to really, I enjoyed making a character who I thought was kind of a heroine in her own right. You know, I think in some ways Callie is the hero of the story as much as Ben, because she saves him and his broken heart as much as sort of he saves her in terms of when she gets shot. Oh, I shouldn't give these things away. But there's sort of mutual saving going on. But I'm just curious about if that part touched your heart or struck some chords of familiarity and what you thought of that.
Meredith, this is Parker again. I thought you did a fantastic job of the way you wrote that. Like someone, and here again, I don't want to say too much for those that haven't read it yet, but the interaction when little things happen, I thought, like, I've had that happen. You know, I understand exactly what she's saying. You did a marvelous job of that.
For those of us that are blind related, and for those of those people that read the book that are not blind, it's a teaching moment. Very well done.
Yeah, and you didn't focus on it a lot. You know, you put it out there, and it's more like what we go through. But yeah, you didn't hold on to it for a long time where someone might get tired of it or throw their thoughts off.
That blows my heart, because I tried to strike a balance a little bit. I didn't want to make the book just about that, but it was one of the things that inspired me to write it originally. So I want to make it, you know, I did want you to give a little bit of insight, you know, for those that don't live that world. It's interesting because my father-in-law thought, you know, he's like, well, I don't know, you know, what people that don't know anything are. He's like, you know, I know you, and I'm very interested in reading this because I feel like I got insight into you, but I don't know people that don't know anybody that's blind will be interested in it. But that hasn't been my experience so far. I think people have enjoyed, you know, I think people are curious about what our lives are like and what it's like to live day to day. And so I did try to provide in a beautiful, hopefully beautiful and respectful way, some insight into that. You know, I think There's elements of it that go on in book two and book three of that. It's interesting. I'm at the end of book three writing, and there's some things that happen with Ben that kind of end up reversing some of the things. Oh, gosh, again, I tend to want to give too much away, but it kind of goes back to some more of that at the end of book three. But I sort of felt like the narrative took over towards the end, I think, in book two. It's a side note. It's not a main thing, but I think there's still enough intrigue in there with it to hopefully provide some interesting elements for the story as well. So thank you for that feedback. That really blesses me.
Well, Terry and I have known each other for years, and as he mentioned earlier, the fact that you hooked him and he had to finish that book, read right straight through it, paid you the biggest compliment you're ever going to get anywhere.
I had a similar thing happen to me with that coffee thing. My stepmother was going to hand me a cup of coffee. Well, of course, she had the handle, and it was a glass cup, and the cup was hot. And I said, I can't take this way. I said, you need to set it down on a table. You've got the cool part. I can't take the hot part because it's hot. And it's almost like she didn't quite get it at first.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many collisions of, you know, plates, cups, glasses, because part of my vision loss is, you know, even though I do have some sight, I have absolutely no depth perception at all. I mean, I have such a hard time with stairs because I can't see, you know, even places like when I go to work, I have to go up 3 flights of stairs. I can see them going up for some reason, but I can't see them at all going down. And no matter how many times I've been down those stairs for 25 years, I still like, they scare me. I mean, it's like they're all carpeted, so there's no distinction in the color or anything. And they're really hard. So when people hand me things, it's like that too. I don't, like, trying to get a gauge of how far away it is, how close it is to me is really hard. So I always tell people, ah, just set it in front of me and let me reach for it, because otherwise I'm going to bump you and knock it into you or knock it into me. Or so, you know, I tried to find some kind of interesting things like that. I like, you know, the story I told in the book about being in that, when Callie was young with her father and she was in the aisle looking at hair barrettes, and the woman walked up and saw her holding things really close and said, "Did you forget your glasses?" That actually happened to me. That's actually a story from my real life, except of course it was with my mom. So I put that in there just because it left an impression on me, because I thought it was such a bizarre thing for that woman to say. And I try to be a little bit more gracious in the book about it than the woman actually was to me when she said it. She was pretty rude. But my mom was kind of took the role of Callie's dad and kind of stepped in and sort of embarrassed the lady a little, but I think made her realize that she needed to maybe think about how she approached situations like that and be a little bit more conscientious of things. But some of those elements did come from my real experiences and real life.
I think we've all had experiences like that happen to us. We all have varying degrees of vision loss. Some of us are totally blind, like myself, and others of us do have usable vision. So there's a variety of vision loss degrees here in this group. Well, we're getting close to the hour, and we certainly don't want to take up all evening of your time. You've certainly been gracious and kind and wow. I feel like I've made a new friend. You're one of those people that you feel like you've met before somewhere. And I'm so honored to have had the opportunity to interview. You talk about self-confidence. I had the little butterflies before I came into this, and they very quickly evaporated when I started talking to you. So I'm very honored and blessed to have this opportunity.
Yeah, Meredith, now that you know where we are and how to get in here, don't be a stranger. Come and join us once in a while. I know you're very busy. It probably won't be a lot, but you're definitely welcome, and we'd love to have you.
Hey, Meredith, it's Kevin again. I'm more than willing and happy to talk to you and share any knowledge I do have about the plugins that will automatically remove things from the audio. I would even be willing to do a sample of what it can do and then help, you know, you learn more about it. Just whatever, you know, I'm an easygoing guy, so. We'll figure out how to get in touch if you want to.
I would love that. You feel free to just like email me. Probably like the best email to email me is through my author one, which is meredithgibbons.author@gmail.com. So it's just my no dot between my first and last name, meredithgibbons.author@gmail.com. So you can email me there. And then, you know, if any of you want to, honestly, the best way to keep up with all the new, like, comings and goings of my books, because I, like I said, I'm so excited about book 3. It's so good. There may or may not be a wedding in book 3, so I don't know, just a little intrigue there. But that was fun. But yeah, I have a newsletter that I send out, and I think I signed a few of you up, those of you that actually sent me your email addresses and that I dumped the book directly into your book funnel app. I put you in my newsletter, so hopefully you want to be there. But I don't send a lot because I wish I had more time. Time is my enemy right now. I told my mom, I said, if I really, really enjoy this, I'm going to have to cut back on classes because I can't really be successful at this and work, you know, 60 hours a week teaching classes and try to do this. I mean, it's just too all-encompassing. So hopefully at some point I'll make enough money doing this to be able to cut back on some of the other stuff I do. But if you want to sign up for that, if you actually just go to my website, meredithgibbons.com, there's a tab that says sign up to stay informed. It's just right there on the front page. And you just put in your email address. There's a little form that pops up, and all it asks is for your email address and your name. And it signs you up for my newsletter. And then like once or twice a month, you just get an email from me and it says, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm working on book three. It looks like it's going to come out this time. And I always give updates on the audiobook. I always have links to where you can go to buy stuff or find stuff. So that's probably the very best way. Those of you who are really interested in what's coming out or when the next book is coming out or just even the process, I try to talk a little bit about the process. Nobody asked me in here how I did the audiobook, but that's a really interesting, you know, I'm blind, so reading it wasn't really possible for me. So that was a really interesting process as well that I'm perfecting because I'm so much, it's like a learning curve. I'm much better at it for book two than I was in book one. But if you want to learn that stuff, definitely sign up for my newsletter. But Kevin, I would love to talk to you about that because I told my husband, I said, if I could cut the time that this takes me by, you know, like half, it would be, I mean, spending 7 hours a chapter is a lot of time. So I would love to hear more about how to do that for sure. But sign up for that if you want to kind of stay informed. And I will definitely try to check in. You know, time is precious. So writing, trying to find time to write is super difficult. But I do plan to stay connected to this group for sure. So
thank you so much for your time tonight. And I was just curious, what type of computer do you use to do your writing and your recording? And your audio, your recording was excellent, by the way.
Just very quickly, if you look in the author category of items of interest, we have a link right to Meredith's homepage.
Okay, so, and I'm not in a hurry, by the way, so anybody that wants to ask me a question, I don't mind. As long as my iPad doesn't run out of juice, I'm fine. I'm just on vacation here today, so don't feel rushed. If I don't want anybody that wants to ask me a question to not be able to. But I actually, because of my having some eyesight, I use primarily the adaptive technology, the accessibility technology that Apple provides works really good for me. So I use the like screen reader, like the little tools. Right now I'm looking at my screen and I've got the little tool on the side that you tap it twice and then you can tap anywhere on your screen and it reads it to you. That works really well. And then I have the little zoom wheel too, so I can zoom in and see things on the screen. So I started using Apple products for iPhone and iPad, and I had a PC forever and ever, but just about, as Terry knows, because he had to help me here, about a year and a half ago, I switched to a MacBook because I could integrate my iPad and my iPhone really easily all together and, you know, I can copy one thing off my iPad and paste it into my computer. So I've gone completely Apple with everything. But again, that's just, you know, I think everybody has a different accessibility features that work for them. And I've really loved Apple's for me. I don't even have to pay for the extra things. It's just all right there. And it reads all my papers to me for work. You know, I have an app on my iPad that pulls up all my students' papers for work. And I just tap that and it reads papers to me. So it's just worked out really well for me. So I'm a Mac girl, and that's where I get the Hindenburg narrator that I do the recording through. And I have earbuds in my ears and I listen to the book through. I actually I don't know if any of you guys use the voice in Microsoft Word. It's pretty good now. Like the AI voice, it's not as bad as the robotic voices. So I use that voice in my ear, and then I'm like half a second behind it. So I'm hearing the sentence being read from a Word document in my ear, and then I'm narrating it out, which was so hard at first. I had terrible headaches for the first 4 or 5 chapters, but then your brain kind of gets used to it. And, you know, I've gotten better. I'm glad you guys, like for me, I thought the quality of the recording was not the best for book one. It's actually turning out so much better for book two. And I think some of that was you could actually just slightly hear the narration in my ear was getting picked up just a little bit by the mic. So this time for book two, I put big old like earmuff headphones over the top of my earbud so it blocks out any sound at all coming from my earbuds. So it's not picking any of that up at all in the microphone. So I think that's part of why the quality is a little better. And then I think I've just gotten a little better at the editing tools. But that's how I did it. I listened and then acted it out from, and it's funny playing with the speed because I have to do it, you know, a little bit slower than like a speed I would listen to it at in order to keep up and not get lost with the narration. So,
well, I listened to it on headphones and I didn't hear any talk back at all in any of it. So I of course I didn't have it up real loud, but I didn't hear any of that.
Do you have like an acoustically treated audio booth where you do your reading and like?
Say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't. Audio boost? What do you mean?
Audio booth. Sorry, I'm still trying to learn how to speak. An acoustically treated audio booth.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, I do not. I just did this in my office at home. I have a home office that, you know, I work, since I do so much teaching online and stuff, I work from at home. So, and that was a challenge too, because every time an airplane, we live about 3 miles from an executive airport. So every time an airplane would fly over, it was like, oh, gotta stop for a minute, let the airplane fly over. I do not. So I've just kind of had to, and that's why I said that the house has to be completely quiet. I can't record when my son's home for lunch or my husband's home for lunch, because even their footsteps, I have a really good microphone, but unfortunately it picks up everything. So yeah, I just did it from my office.
Well, maybe you need a soundproof room and you can lock yourself in.
I know I do a radio show on here too. And I deal with the same thing because we always have jets going over here in Madison. And I'm always having to stop it and let the stupid jet go over.
Yeah, I can totally relate for sure.
Again, Meredith, thank you so very much for coming on. I totally agree with Parker. You are a delightful lady. And we are just so honored to make your acquaintance.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And I want to hear what you think about book two. So email me or reach out to me. I have a great Facebook page too that I'm pretty interactive with. It's just Meredith Gibbons author page. So join me there, join my newsletter, or just email me. I want to hear what you think of that as well. The second book might be just a smidge spicier, so I hope you guys don't mind bringing the spice level up just a little, but it's still, overall, it's pretty clean. But, you know, got to move Ben and Callie further in this romance, so, and like I said, a little more adventure as well. So I hope you really enjoy that, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on that. And again, thank you all so much for sharing this story with me and for your support. I really appreciate it.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.